You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This was one of the most useful podcasts that I've ever done. It's with Andrew Huberman, the neuroscientist, all about the neurochemicals in your brain and how to maximize them during the different times of day so you have an optimal brain day. We've talked about half the neurochemicals. Stay tuned for the other half.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
So it seems like when you wake up, for optimal dopamine to kick in, for focus and happiness and you know, pursuing dreams and so on, it's like you get that movement going, so your energy levels go up, so the norepinephrine kicks in. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of pick an achievable goal for the morning and a target. So that kind of starts kicking in the anticipation. So dopamine starts to spike, which is enhanced by the norepinephrine spiking. Then if you also kind of maybe skip breakfast, have a cup of coffee, take L-tyrosine, that further enhances the dopamine. So now you're all ready to go, you know, for those morning goals, maybe, you know, day goals or whatever.
Yeah. And I don't recommend people take L-tyrosine every day. I think you're better off doing it with behavior and behavioral stuff and nutrition. You have to eat every day. So the supplementation, I think, is for occasional use. Now, and there's some warnings on those labels if people are already taking antidepressants and stuff. But for occasional use, I find it to be useful. Now, the one thing I just want to mention, and I might reference an article that I published with a guy, a former SEAL team member by the name of Pat Dossett. We had an article in Fast Company about, it was more geared towards how to deal with stress. But the first point that we made in there was one that if you're feeling stressed, because sometimes being in forward action, you're caffeinated, you slept well, you're in action, can make you feel stressed and you're having a hard time focusing. The way you focus is by training the focus system. And the way you do that is by setting your sights on an immediate goal and a horizon that's close in that you know you can accomplish. And it can be an even trivial one. It can be, look, I'm going to make my cup of coffee. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to take care of 4 email and that's it. That's my first goal. Now, of course, that's not your entire goal for the day, but it's goal-directed behavior. And so you're coupling the neural circuits for focus with the neural circuits for goal-directed behavior with the neural circuits for energy and agitation. You're getting those aligned. They're coherent. Whereas when you sit down and you look at your phone and you're getting likes from Instagram and trying to take care of some emails, your neurochemical systems are kind of split. They're incoherent. And it's no wonder that by 11 or 11:30, you haven't accomplished much or you feel like you've been kind of overworked and you're a little discombobulated. So there's a reason why in the SEAL team community, you know, there's the kind of famous YouTube video that Admiral Craven gave about, you know, first thing in the morning, make your bed. There's a reason why in those communities and all military communities for that matter, you have regular, predictable, tractable practices that you know you can accomplish first thing in the day. It's not necessarily just about the practice. It's not about having a well-made bed. It's not about making a cup of coffee. It's about you being in control of the control circuits because you have these brain circuits that are involved in controlling yourself and setting blinders on yourself when you need to and moving forward towards those goals. And if you don't practice those circuits, you don't take control of them, your brain is perfectly happy to go get dopamine any number of ways, get serotonin any number of ways. And so you can train up focus. You can train up goal-directed behavior. And what's cool about it is it's an amplifying effect so that pretty soon you get up in the morning, you find yourself naturally in forward motion and naturally targeted on specific goals.
So this suggests a lot of behaviors. Like for instance, if you find yourself just glued to the computer, I don't know, programming or writing an article or whatever, you're sort of saying, hey, take a break every now and then so you could move or, you know, get some forward motion. So you at least keep the norepinephrine up there, which keeps the dopamine still up there.
Yeah. You know, there's some good evidence that for work, you know, we want to do 90-minute, what are called ultradian cycles to distinguish them from circadian cycles, that, you know, working for 90 minutes, then the brain tends to, its attentional mechanisms tend to need a little bit of a rest. And then going back to things, there's the Pomodoro technique of, I think it's, you know, bouts of 20 minutes with rest. There are a bunch of different ways to chunk your effort. But I would say, you know, whatever allows you to focus well on a particular goal and move toward that, pick that goal deliberately and move toward it. And that's, it's very normal to have some what I call mental pop-ups for, you know, the pop-ups in your mind to come about, or you think you need to look at your phone or maybe even do it, but to set that aside. And if you can do this, you will greatly enhance your ability to do this over time. So, so that's the dopamine system, in a nutshell, and how to lean into it. And then through the afternoon, what happens is cortisol and norepinephrine naturally start dropping off. That's why I recommend people get a little bit of sunlight towards the afternoon hours. Maybe that's a good time to get your exercise. It's really, you know, I can't tell people when to exercise. If you start ramping up the dopamine system or drinking a lot of coffee late in the afternoon, that's fine too, right? But you might run into a problem where you're going to have challenges getting to sleep in the evening. And you know, so as the day progresses, I don't know if now is a good time we talk about serotonin and about rest, yeah. But as the day progresses, there are a couple things you want to do. You want to start pulling back on that dopamine and norepinephrine system. So obviously not drinking too much caffeine late in the day, unless you know, really need to pull an all-nighter or something. But if you're planning to go to sleep that night, pulling back on that system, the foods you eat toward bedtime are really key. So serotonin is... some people take 5-HTP, which is the immediate precursor to serotonin. You can take that in pill form. I don't recommend that for the same reason I don't recommend L-DOPA for dopamine. It's too close to the natural chemical serotonin. But there's a naturally occurring amino acid called L-tryptophan. This is what's present in turkey and in complex carbohydrates like pastas and rices and things like that, that is a precursor to serotonin. And so this is why many people find it useful to eat the majority of their complex carbohydrates late in the day. This runs against a lot of advice people have heard, but late in the day to promote the secretion of tryptophan and help them transition to more relaxation and sleep and to eat more of that. So I personally eat low carb during the day, and then I eat my carbohydrates at night because it allows me to relax and sleep. And I don't tend to eat breakfast. I don't tend to eat in the morning. So the L-tryptophan really helps calm down. Now, there are a few other things that can really help improve sleep. And I want to just point to a couple of things that people probably are already doing that are not good, in my opinion. Again, this is just my opinion. First of all, I am not a fan of people taking melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that was designed to be released at night, and it helps the transition to sleep. And I think Matt Walker in his book, Why We Sleep, also talks about melatonin and some of the potential hazards with melatonin. Melatonin's primary role in development is to suppress puberty. It's the reason why kids don't go into puberty until a particular age. They have chronically high melatonin. Okay.
So that's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so if you take melatonin at night, what happens to you?
Well, it's, you know, humans, you know, their reproductive system can override a lot of these hormonal changes, but it's probably not great for the reproductive hormones, testosterone in men and estrogen in women. It's going to throw that off. All these hormones are in communication with one another. So this is why I'm not a fan of melatonin. But also melatonin promotes the transition to sleep, but it won't keep you asleep. And so a lot of people take melatonin, they fall asleep, and then they wake up at 2:30, 3 in the morning. There are a couple things that can enhance sleep or the ability to get to sleep. So carbohydrate-rich foods, things like turkey and white meats are going to be the proteins that, you know, ideally you'd eat late in the day if you want to rest. Things that are in the supplementation world that I take, or for instance, I take something called L-theanine, L-T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. 100 to 200 milligrams of L-theanine promotes the synthesis of GABA. And GABA is what's required to shut off the forebrain so that you can fall asleep. So theanine, I should just, one warning, if you're a sleepwalker, theanine can give you very vivid dreams. And so might not be great for sleepwalkers. But there's theanine and then a compound called magnesium L-threonate, L-T-H-R-E-O-N-A-T-E. It's a specific type of magnesium. You can look on examine.com. There's some evidence that it's neuroprotective, so that's good. But it really increases levels of calm and increases GABA and allows you to access more and better slow wave sleep. And I think in the last year, I've recommended that combination to through my consulting work to hundreds, but to a couple dozen people outside of that who have serious insomnia. And all of them tell me that they're just so happy that they're finally able to fall asleep and sleep well. Magnesium threonate and L-theanine. And some people throw L-tryptophan into the mix because you can buy that. I've never tried L-tryptophan. I don't tend to use that. Some people will take a little bit of glycine, which is another neurotransmitter that promotes glycine. It's glycine, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter, tends to shut down brain activity a little bit. Glycine's a little bit of a tricky one. I recommend if people are already staying off bright lights in the evening, because that's the one I should have mentioned, try not to surround yourself with bright lights in the evening, especially bright overhead lights. The cells in your eye that wake up the brain, that wake up your body, are in the lower half of your retina to view the upper visual field because they want to view the sun. In the morning, you want to get a lot of that light above head, overhead, or sunlight into your eyes and during the day. But in the evening, if you have lights at home, try and keep them low in the room physically. If you have overhead lights, try and dim them. And I'm not too paranoid about blue lights, but you really don't want to get bright light exposure between the hours of 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. I think we talked about this a little bit last time because it can really mess up the dopamine pathway, can mess up sleep. But L-theanine and magnesium 3-8, that combination is really good. And if you are really an aficionado of this stuff, you could throw something into the mix called apigenin, A-P-I-G-E-N-I-N, 50 milligrams of apigenin. And it's really a derivative of chamomile extract. It's like if you read your kids' books, you know, it's when Peter Rabbit snuck into Mr. McGregor's garden, ate all the chamomile and fell asleep, right? And then woke up and Mr. McGregor was back in his garden. Chamomile tends to make us a little bit sleepy. And so those three things together, when I take those, I feel like I got clubbed over the head in a good way. And I wake up feeling great and I sleep really well. And for years, I was waking up at 4 in the morning, having trouble falling back asleep. Again, check with your doctor, but these are natural compounds in high potency. These are not—
What time do you go to sleep at night?
So I'm bad about this. I'll be honest, James. I'm really alert and awake early in the morning. In the afternoon, my brain doesn't tend to work that well. I like to take a nap and relax. And then I tend to stay up till about 11, sometimes 12. If I go to bed at 10 o'clock, I wake up at 3 in the morning ready to go, but I rarely get to sleep at 10. I just figure a lot of great things in life happen after 10 p.m. And so I like the way my mind works between 10 p.m. and midnight. It's different than the way my mind works in the morning. It's a different kind of it's a little bit more non-linear operations, but sometimes that's good. And so I use this, I use the naps. And I do a practice called yoga nidra. I think I mentioned it last time, but where you lie down and just listen to this script once a day, that helps me fall asleep when I need to. It helps me recapture some rest that I didn't get during the night. So I tend to go to sleep around 11, 1130, and I wake up around 6:30. And I could probably use a little bit more sleep. I generally wake up feeling a little bit groggy, but once I get into motion and I start going, I'm good until about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And then I need a break.
So you mentioned, like for serotonin, you mentioned you don't take L-tryptophan, maybe you have, some complex carbs and so on, and that triggers or nuts, and that triggers the L-tryptophan. But do you do anything else to boost your serotonin?
Okay, so meat and nuts are good for dopamine and norepinephrine, and a molecule I haven't talked about called acetylcholine, which is good for focus. Okay, L-tyrosine, nuts, meats, you know, those sort of batch together for energy and focus. Caffeine. If you can drink caffeine, hydrating really well.
Acetylcholine, is that a supplement or is that
acetylcholine is a naturally occurring neuromodulator that increases focus. There are ways you can increase that too. There are supplements like, You can, like, alpha GPC is a supplement that will increase acetylcholine. But yeah, so, and then for the serotonin pathway, it's complex carbohydrates, white meats, like turkey in particular, apigenin, theanine, and magnesium 3 and 8. I have to be careful.
Oh, I see. All of those are for serotonin. They're not just for the GABA.
Serotonin and GABA. Yeah, so I look at my day as two parts, right? For most people, it's going to be two parts. You wake up, you want to be energized and alert and focused during the day. And then as nightfall comes, you want to start transitioning into more relaxation and sleep so that by, you know, whatever, 10, 11, 12 p.m., you're going into a deep slumber and then waking up and ready to do the next thing. I always say the two states that human beings need to master, you know, I love the discussions about flow and I love the, you know, discussions about awe and creativity. That's all fun stuff. But how about we just master these two states? Calm and focused or asleep. If you can be calm and focused, you know, calm, alert and focused or asleep, if you can do that, you're in a position to do most everything really well.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James.
Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
It's such a great point, and it makes me think these two states reminds me of basically the two strands of, I hate to call it self-help because I'm about to describe books that I consider not self-help, but like the focus, the morning activities, the dopamine, the focus, the anticipation, the moving towards a goal, that reminds me of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. So instead of like, if you wake up and you want that short-term goal, instead of just randomly getting your dopamine by searching, you know, just thumbing through Instagram, which is like you say, is scattered, having some sense of meaning, even if it's tiny, like, oh, I just need to return 4 emails. That kind of pushes you in the morning, increases the dopamine and keeps you going towards the next goal. If you always have kind of micro meanings for each part of that morning, you're going to keep the dopamine going. And then afterwards in the afternoon, I'm switching to a new book, The Power of Now by like Eckhart Tolle, like just focusing on like what's good about right mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. kind of is this serotonin thread of self-help.
Yeah. Ram Dass, be here now. Wherever you go, there you are. You know, and then on the other side, you've got, I love the contrast because I know David, we've done a little bit of work together, you know, like David Goggins, like Can't Hurt Me. It's all about like, you know, David's a master of driving himself toward goals, regardless of how he feels internally. I mean, and I'll tell you from knowing him a bit, he is every bit as intense and every bit as goal-driven and focused and disciplined as he comes across. That's not a persona that he's created. That's him. And so you've got these, you know, and in Eastern medicine, they might call it yin-yang. And, you know, in the Bay Area, we might call it, you know, for the San Franciscoites, you'll know what this means, but we might call it like Mission Marina. You know, I don't know what they call it in New York, but it's these different personalities that are more about the here and now and being relaxed or more like hard driving and in pursuit. But we all have these, both these systems. I should mention something about the high performance communities. One thing that you find, and I don't think this is discussed much, but one of the things that you find about people who are very high performers, especially people that do work in very complex, chaotic environments over long periods of time, is that they master the toggling back and forth between these two systems. They really do. They really master the ability to control their dopamine system and not let it control them. So they're not getting pulled by dopamine by some external force. They're driving toward an external goal and getting dopamine in the process. So they're keeping that close by, so to speak. They're not getting pulled towards something. They're moving toward it. And they're very good at relaxing. I was very surprised to see that some of the people who are the best performers are really good at going from full intensity to full relaxation.
Let me ask you a question. Like, have you seen, this is going to sound out of the blue, but have you seen all the Star Wars movies, like the prequels?
So I saw the first 3 of my generation. I didn't see the subsequent 3 that I'm told were the early ones. I sort of can't get past the switch up in the format. I grew up on, right, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Like are those the ones you're referring to?
No, there's this one scene in the very first one, I forgot what it's called now, where one of the Jedi's having like this intense lightsaber battle against one of the bad guys, and then a door shuts between them, like an automatic door, and he has to wait for 5 seconds. And so he instantly just like goes down on his knees, closes his eyes, and appears to be meditating. And then as soon as the door opens up again, he jumps up and then starts fighting with the lightsaber again. And it sounds like that's the toggling between dopamine and serotonin, but very quickly.
That's right. And if you can learn to master this, the transitions between these systems, you can see an outsized effect on performance and relationships in your life, right? I mean, you mentioned self-help and the high-performance world and all these business books, a lot of them, business wellness type stuff, is really about trying to amplify one or the other set of circuits. Whereas I really feel that when you look at true high performers, they have great careers and healthy relationships. That's why I referenced, you know, Don Kennedy early on. You know, incidentally, Don was a runner. He used to get up every morning and run. You find that people, they learn how to tap into both of these and switch back and forth, right? It's not just about being in one mode or the other. Because I confess, I grew up in the Bay Area and I've been down to Esalen and it's beautiful and all this stuff. And, I've done a couple meditation retreats. But the fact of the matter is, I was never interested in just sitting and being still for endless amounts of time and then going back to work for endless amounts of time. You know, ideally you do this on a day-to-day basis or even across the day. I have a trough in the middle of my day where I try and get into non-thinking, non-speaking, non-doing for maybe 10 minutes. That's what yoga nidra is really about. So that in the evening, I get a second round of high focus work because that's just the way my life's organized. I can lean back into training or intellectual work in the same way, the same intensity and focus I could early in the day because I have put a trough in the middle and then I go to sleep. And so you don't have to do this across the lifetime. You know, you see so many people just go, 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 and then crash. And then they learn how to do this and maybe they disappear and come back. You want to do this across the 24-hour cycle every day. And sometimes more and sometimes less of one or the other.
Like when do you let your gratitude practice kick in? Is it when you're making this transition from morning to afternoon or is it throughout?
My gratitude practice.
This is related to serotonin.
The gratitude practice is definitely related to serotonin. It might tickle the dopamine system a little bit, but the gratitude practice that I really try and incorporate is toward the end of the day. I really try and, focus on what went well, what I've got, the fact that, you know, I'm here. Fortunately, I don't have COVID-19. Fortunately, I'm still employed. All these things that I can really be grateful for, I really try and just spend 1 to 3 minutes thinking about that. And that does help me make the transition into the evening. It helps me realize that I've got most of the things I need here. And I just put aside any anxiety that will take me out of pursuit. In fact, once you realize this kind of yin-yang, let's just call it that, of the dopamine system and the serotonin system, you start to realize that it's the ability to engage the serotonin system, the ability to deliberately disengage the goal-directed, outward-facing behavior and mindset that's going to allow me to re-engage that at a heightened capacity the next day. It's really mental recovery. It's really about shaking off that extra, I have a friend from the SEAL team community who calls it residue. You need to shake off the residue if you want to be able to recover and lean back in.
And oxytocin, is that so tied up with serotonin that you don't have to think about it? Or is there extra practices you could do for oxytocin?
So oxytocin is an interesting one. Oxytocin is really about long-term pair bonding. The after sexual intercourse is one time when oxytocin is flooding the brain in men and women. This ensures some level of scent exchange. We're still very much scent and pheromonally linked animals, even though we don't often talk about that. It encourages those bonds so that you recognize that person's smell and other features of their chemical biology later, even when you're not reproducing. It's nature. It's Mother Nature's little trick. And it's a nice trick in most cases. It's a Mother Nature's little trick so that creates warmth and familiarity. And it really has the effect of neuroplasticity. It starts to rewire the circuits that make you feel safe. And it in particular makes you feel safe in the presence of that person, AKA those chemicals. And babies and mothers and babies in particular, but also fathers and babies, this is the oxytocin system is really ramped up and babies are naturally in a heightened state of plasticity so that their feelings of safety are naturally linked to that parent, which is really a chemical relationship at that point.
And so is there anything I should do during the day to kind of kick the oxytocin stuff in. And, you know, particularly now we're moving into a new normal where people aren't going to be in as much physical contact on a daily basis. You know, no more shaking hands, no more hugging.
Yeah. The oxytocin system is one that really requires some stillness and pause. You know, it's not a fast system. You know, the dopamine system, as I mentioned before, like with humor, you get a quick shot of dopamine, or you're doing lousy and all of a sudden, you know, maybe if you're into markets, because I know you know a lot about markets, you know, all of a sudden you see an inflection like, ooh, and all of a sudden your alertness goes up and you're cued to it. That's dopamine. That's norepinephrine. The serotonin system is more like if someone comes in and puts their hand on your shoulder, kind of leans down and maybe gives you a peck on the cheek, you're like, oh, that feels good. And like, okay, I feel the oxytocin system is going to be more like you took a walk with your spouse or your significant other. You held hands. Maybe you just sat together, or you sat with your child and played a game. And in the back of your mind, you're thinking, you know, wow, this is amazing. Like he or she is growing up and you're feeling a lot of those chemicals flood you. Again, you can take deliberate action for these. Now, there are folks out there that are using oxytocin nasal spray. This is a real thing. I've never tried this. And I don't recommend it because a lot of it is through the olfactory system, that are using oxytocin nasal spray to try and increase pair bonding. I hear rumors, trust me, I only hear the rumors. I've never been around this, but I hear rumors of people stacking oxytocin with ecstasy to try and create bonds between people. I don't recommend going that route. I think oxytocin and the oxytocin system is best, engaged through natural behaviors. You know, evolution did a good job with this. I can mention, you know, I don't work on this, and I don't do it myself, but the ecstasy, since I mentioned that drug, is a very synthetic compound. It doesn't match any of our natural biology, and it's designed to trigger increases in dopamine and serotonin simultaneously so that you strongly reinforce the pursuit of whatever things are happening in that immediate environment. It's like a tight loop, whereas between dopamine and serotonin that normally doesn't exist. And there's some very interesting clinical trials that are happening right now with MDMA for intractable depression and for other stuff done by the MAPS group and done out at Johns Hopkins. So it's gonna be really interesting to see what the results of those are. But those are that's a very synthetic, artificial situation. It's like cocaine and marijuana at the same time. It's sort of like, maybe people do that, I don't know. But it's not a place to dabble and play games. It's definitely something that should be done in clinical trials. I just mention it because it's happening. It's kind of interesting because it reflects this discussion.
Well, what's great is I feel from this discussion that I understand now so much better, not only dopamine and serotonin, but all the practices to put in place, both with, you know, how the neurochemicals work, what activities trigger them, what supplements might enhance them, what periods of the day they work better in. If I follow this regimen that you've described on dopamine, for instance, how close is that to, let's say, someone who takes a nootropic or Adderall or something?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. There was an article that the BBC published. They contacted me about nootropics and asked about smart drugs. And I think we need to be really careful with the discussion about smart drugs or nootropics as they're called, because let's think about physical exercise just as an example. There's strength, there's endurance, there's flexibility, there's explosiveness, and there's mobility. In the realm of smart, you've got creativity, strategy development, strategy implementation. You've got linear thinking, nonlinear thinking. There's no drug right now that can tap into each one of those states separately. I will use this as a moment. I have a book coming out in early January that talks about the states of creativity and focus and some of these other things and tools to access them. But right now, the nootropics that I'm aware of, they will increase focus and alertness. They have things in them that will do that, but they won't specifically tap into certain kinds of mental operations. And so a lot of them have the things that I've discussed here. They have things like L-tyrosine or hordenine or other things. I haven't talked about hordenine, but things that are designed to increase blood flow, increase norepinephrine, and increase the dopamine system. When I look at most of the formulations that are out there, I confess I don't like them. They have things like mecunopurines, which is L-DOPA, which I'm not a fan of people taking. I feel like so far I have not seen the really killer nootropic that taps into these things in the right ways. And I see a lot of experimenting, but you know, it's it's nothing that really kind of grabs my attention in a positive way just yet. But sorry, you had another question.
But like Adderall, compare this regimen with Adderall.
So Adderall, so I went to college before Adderall, but now I've heard some colleges have banned Adderall. I think Duke has banned the use of Adderall, except for people that really need it for ADD. So it's interesting. So Adderall was developed as a drug to treat ADD because the forebrain circuits that that are very tightly linked up with the dopamine system, those circuits, so for focus and alertness and attention, in kids that have attention deficit, by giving them Adderall, it turned on those circuits and made them hyper-focused. And because kids are in such a state of heightened neuroplasticity, it made the focus circuits stronger, okay? So for adults that have trouble with focus, Adderall is likely to just increase norepinephrine and dopamine. So it has a kind of similar effect, but it's almost, it has the potential for abuse and for addiction because it's very intense. It's like hitting the accelerator on dopamine and norepinephrine. And it can, in many people, it can crash them down below baseline. Remember, you never want to do a practice that can crash you down below baseline unless it's critical. Like if I have a deadline, I pull about 10, 12 all-nighters a year, I confess, because I start grants late or I start papers late. And under those conditions, I fully expect that the 2 or 3 days afterwards, I'm not going to be at my best. But for ongoing, consistent output, you want to do the behavioral things and maybe some of the supplementation, nutrition things that we talked about earlier. Adderall will definitely get you laser focused. It'll get you super alert, but it's going to drop you down far. And it's going to be hard to transition out of it gradually. And if you stop taking it, you're going to have a really hard time getting back down to baseline. You're going to feel like garbage for a while. Whereas the things that I'm talking about, the next day after taking L-tyrosine, provided it's in the appropriate doses and you're not doing it too often, you might not feel your absolute best, but you're not going to feel like you would had you taken a drug of abuse or Adderall the previous day.
What about is there any point in the day where I want endorphins to kick in just to kind of get that opioid feeling?
So it's interesting you ask that. Right now we can't really point to any specific need for that. I have a practice where once a week I do a long run. Sometimes it's a hike, but I do a long run. I just go out for, 60 minutes or more and I just run and I'll go slow and I just build up that endurance system. That's just my personal practice. I'd much prefer to do one of these kind of high intensity training things where you're, moving some heavy objects, jumping around and moving around quickly. That feels good to me on a more regular basis, but I do like to tap into that, opioid system through running. The opioid system also allows your forebrain to turn off. If you ever go on a long run, provided you're not listening to something that requires a lot of attention, so music or an audiobook or a podcast would be fine, but something that doesn't require, like you don't have to feel like you have to stop constantly and pay attention to every little bit, then the forebrain tends to kind of shut off and you get into these kind of pseudo sleep states. So things like flotation tanks, meditation, yoga nidra, long runs, they tend to turn off the forebrain and they take you out of linear operations. What I mean by linear operations is when you're anticipating what's going to happen next, what am I doing in relation to that, and how can I maneuver in the best way possible. Just as an example, it used to be that going to the store to buy groceries was a kind of, you could be on the phone, you were kind of it was almost like a little bit of a dream. You're grabbing things off the shelf, you're kind of looking at things, you move through, you might talk to somebody or not. Now it's all hyperlinear. Right? It's that like you have to pay attention to where other people are, wait your turn in line. Do they have a mask on? Are they coughing? Or did they touch something? And then you don't want to be in constant mode of linear operations, no matter what they are, because they're taxing. You want to devote those linear operations to the things that matter most to you, the big builds in your life, the big business builds, the big, creative builds. So in general, a long run for me is my mental reset to kind of turn off my forebrain and allow me to shift back into the week. That's why I do it on Sundays.
Yeah, I think this is a great guide overall to kind of how to manage the different mental states and stay in control of them rather than them controlling you.
Ten Penn State's reputation in the fashion industry is something you would hear from everyone when you're in New York City.
I will say we're quite well known for being hard workers.
Kent is really known for delivering well-rounded students.
Kent has one of the most prestigious fashion programs in the U.S. and also internationally ranked.
Our alumni are in every corner of the industry, every job position that you can imagine.
They all are ready. They have all the courses. They have everything under, you know, under their belt.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Let me ask you, this is like more... it's going to sound a little stupid, but it's a situation that kind of recurs in my life over the past 30 years, and it's going to sound odd. So whenever I find whenever I'm unhappy in a life situation, I'll get addicted to one thing in particular, and I can't stop. And it's playing one-minute chess online. So I have to play, I'll just play 24 straight. Let's say it's like 1992, I was unhappy in a relationship, and I would just start playing 24 hours a day of 1 minute chess. So let's say a chess game is 40 moves. So you're making a move every, three quarters of a second or a second and a half. And I would just play over and over and over again, and I wouldn't be able to stop. And I always would recognize over time that, oh, I only tend to do this when I'm unhappy. And it seems related to somehow like some need for this quick dopamine fix over and over and over again. And then that feeling of more that you were describing.
Yeah.
Because maybe I wasn't happy with my here and now.
Yeah. I think it's an adaptive thing that you're describing. It takes you into a mode of thinking, hey, wait, there, once you can reengage that circuit, just like people that, you know, get up and engage in a practice, it's not directly related to their larger goal, but it reengages the goal-directed circuitry. It redirects the control circuitry. It's a small, but not insignificant way of taking control of your neurology. And I think what's nice about it, because I don't know how to play chess, so I have chess envy. I have always wanted to learn how to play chess. What's nice about it is that you're 100% in control of it. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's only a minute.
The stimulus very fast.
The stimulus is very fast.
I'm gonna win or lose right away.
Look, for me, there's certain music, right? I mean, I'm a human being. I've had my lows and, I have life events and lows. And there've been times when I have to return to a particular, you know, particular genre or of music, or listen to something, and I realize it brings back my sense of possibility. Sometimes that music makes me a little agitated, maybe even a little angry, but you know, it gives me my fight back, because there's nothing worse than being back on your heels. I have a good friend who did 9 years in the SEAL teams. His name's Pat Dossett, and he has a great saying. He always says, "Keep your center of mass forward." Just keep your center of mass forward, and sometimes that is even just by doing the dishes. Right. And I love that, because I said, what's that really about? And he said, well, he was describing himself. He said, when I wake up in the morning, there's always the potential to get mentally back on my heels. And I said, really? Like, I didn't know that he did that. And he said, yeah, you know, I could end up mentally back on my heels, but if I get up and do something, I've got my center of mass forward. And just by rewarding myself internally for having my center of mass forward, then I tend to lean forward more and more. And incidentally, he's remarkably good. He has a family. He's got, you know, young twin girls. He's, you know, he's happily married. He's very good at being center of mass forward, hard driving from 5 a.m. or so. He's an early riser. We do these long swims together in the morning until about 6 p.m. And then he's still center of mass forward, but it's about dinner, connecting with his family, getting the house tidy for the next day, and transitioning into a really good night's sleep. Very regimented. But so center of mass forward doesn't always mean in rabid pursuit. You know, sometimes it's center of mass forward on a Netflix show that you want to watch. It's like, I'm going to do this and I know it's good for me, but you're in control of it. So I love the 1 minute chess example. We all have our own.
Except it would be too addictive for me. Like, it was really just about getting I couldn't even play 5 minute chess. That was too slow. It was really about getting constant feedback somehow.
So dopamine can serve as a bit of a ramp, or it can serve as a bit of a tunnel that you can go down. So what it sounds like, you were ramping off dopamine and then going into other things. I'll make it a real quick story. There's a guy I know who is a very famous artist who became a gambling addict. And then he finally got over his gambling addiction and he got addicted to Angry Birds. He was playing Angry Birds on his phone like 23 hours a day or something. It was ridiculous. Then he got over that and he rolled into something else and he realized this isn't really about the external thing. This is really about learning how to control this system. And we talked about this. And actually, so what he has to do, because he's a kind of extreme case, is he has to diversify where he gets his dopamine. And he actually has to have someone else control all this for him. His girlfriend gives him a schedule of what he's going to do because he just can't do it. Now, that's an extreme example. Then you've got people, like I mentioned, like my friend Pat, who, you know, picked this kind of mentality up from the SEAL teams, center of mass forward, but can do this 5 a.m. to 6 p.m., very regimented, 6 p.m. to bedtime, very more relaxed mode. People are different, but everyone I think can work with the dopamine and serotonin system. We all have them. We're all born with them. And some of us are a little asymmetric, right? Some people have been over-exercising one or the other, and they might want to pursue the thing that they're not so proficient at. And so hopefully we provide some tools for that.
I like that kind of diversifying the sources of dopamine. And I think that's what I was lacking then. And so I kind of just attached myself to the one thing where I knew I can get like dopamine very quickly over and over again.
Well, remember, the reason I say that addiction is a progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure is because it maps onto the neurobiology. And I'll even go a step further since we're having this discussion. And I see if addiction is a progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure, enlightenment to me is a progressive broadening of the things that bring pleasure. I don't know about true enlightenment in the kind of Buddhist context or in any context, but then again, I don't know anyone who can put a strict definition on enlightenment because it's not a medical phenomenon. But from my life, you know, my experience in my life, the more things that can bring me pleasure, the more certain I am that I can be in pursuit of pleasure from things that are outside my immediate sphere of attention and existence, or not outside the immediate sphere of my attention and grasp, and that I can move toward, as well as the things that are that I already have and that I can look to at any moment if I want to feel good.
Well, Professor Andrew Huberman from Stanford, neurobiology, neuroscience, it's been so great. I've learned so much and I'm definitely going to start applying 100% of these techniques. I'm going to order supplements. I'm going to do my dopamine in the morning, my serotonin later in the day, start kicking in GABA to sleep at night. And I've written a ton of notes, which I'll summarize in an article to go along with this podcast. But your book's coming out in January, so you have to come on a couple times before then. So we start seeding the book because I want to hear now next about the neurochemistry of creativity. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on again. I'm really enjoying our conversations and greatly appreciative. Definitely read approach the Altair scene with caution. You know, don't do it every day, James. I don't want you, treat your dopamine system with care, but do keep me updated how they work for you and your sleep and your focus and your attention. You already seem to have a lot of energy and focus by my read, but I would love to.
Yeah, but I burn out by later in the day. And then it's a matter of scheduling myself so that I can focus on the here and now instead of, you know, just over scheduling too much later in the day.
Great. Well, I'm greatly appreciative of the opportunity to be on here again. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Andrew, thanks so much. And let's talk soon.
My name is Molly, and I'm a political science major at Kent State University. Kent State has these core values, kindness, respect, and purpose in all we do. Ever since I was old enough to understand the legal system, I've wanted to help serve justice, and I would like to be a prosecutor for the city of Cleveland and then hopefully move up to the county in the Justice Center downtown. Kindness and respect go a long way. As a prosecutor, you have to be kind to all parties of the courtroom to truly help everybody involved.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.